Well, good afternoon. My name is Julianne Smith. I'm the director of the Europe program here at CSIS, and I'd like to welcome you to our discussion this afternoon on Afghanistan. It's with great pleasure that I can introduce our speaker, Minister Bert Koenders, who, as many of you know, is the Dutch Minister for Development Cooperation right now. Minister Koenders has had a very distinguished career both in and out of the Dutch government. He's worked for many international organizations as well. Before becoming minister most recently, he was a member of the House of Representatives in the Netherlands and a professor at Sison Bologna. It strikes me as a very enjoyable position. I first met the minister actually when he was serving in the European Commission as the principal administrator of the policy planning staff of the Directorate General for External Relations, Conflict Prevention, and EU Enlargement. Prior to that post, the minister was at the UN, serving in multiple countries around the world, including South Africa, Mozambique, and Mexico. The minister is going to be speaking to us today about Afghanistan and the special balanced approach that the Dutch are taking in that country today. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Minister Bert Koenders.
Thank you very much, Julian. I'll be happy to give you a very good recommendation for Sais Bologna. I think that would be marvelous if you could teach there. We know each other for a long time when you worked with the European Commission in Brussels. And I'm very happy that you gave us an invitation today to discuss a few items related to the very serious and complex mission that we have in Afghanistan. I was actually here for another purpose, namely the IMF World Bank meetings, which were interesting in itself, tough meetings on the future of the bank and the IMF. And as development minister, I'm also very involved, obviously, in our mission in Afghanistan, especially from the competence that I have in the area of development cooperation, transitional justice, and also making sure that the mission that we have with our Dutch forces in the province of Oeruzgan is well integrated with our diplomatic and with our development efforts. So thank you very much for inviting me. As you all know, with the support of the Afghan government, you're not very, very used to tall ministers here, I think. I can barely see my own paper, so it doesn't matter. I can improvise a little bit. We seem to be still the tallest people in the world. I'll try to do something about it. I think with the support of the Afghan government and the international community, and above all, I should say, the Afghan people who've gone through a very difficult period in the last 30 years, I think Afghanistan has come a long way since 2001. We see that reconstruction is gradually gaining a foothold, even in the south. Even there, more girls and boys are going to school than ever before, and the economy is growing. However, I think we all realize, especially the experts among us, that we still have a long way to go, because despite really tremendous progress in the lives of many Afghan people, with the help of the international community in a UN-sanctioned operation. Since the ouster of the Taliban, the security situation is still, I think, fragile, and development is still lagging behind the expectations of the Afghan people. And I think it's something we can also discuss later on. Drugs are still the poisonous lifeblood of the Afghan community. As you know, 90% of most of the heroin that comes on the European markets, I think to a certain extent also on the markets here, is coming from Afghanistan. So there is also a necessity to discuss the concerns we have from a perspective of making this this operation a successful one. Let me mention a few concerns. I think, first of all, after 2001, we've not been able to fundamentally involve the power structure those who were not part of the Northern Alliance. And so the southern populations still don't feel represented. And I think that is a very serious problem in the legitimacy of the government. And it's also a serious concern to those who have troops in the south. So there is definitely a need for improvement. Secondly, I think the power vacuum created after 2002, when troops left Afghanistan for Iraq, for many different nations, have left serious security gaps, which still have to be repaired. And I don't speak so much in terms of a large occupation army. I think everybody who realizes the history of Afghanistan, this would definitely not be a very good solution. But I think when we talk about a flexible stabilization force, flexible teams that create the basis for a new visible administration and reconstruction in the country. After a specific period of time, and this is not easy to define an exit strategy, I think when we look at that situation of a power vacuum and sufficient troops to create the conditions for this, we're far from being there. Third concern I have is that after Operation Enduring Freedom, most of the mission is now taken on by ISAF. I think we still have to even better define, as we do up till now, the relationship between the two missions. We have made clear... hello, how are you? Welcome. we have made clear delineations between those missions, and I think we have to make sure and ensure that they're put into practice. And I think we also have to define more clearly for ourselves what the critical mass of NATO troops are in southern Afghanistan to make it a success. So it's a third concern. I think the most important concern for my competence as Minister for Development Cooperation, that's why I'm hired for, is the quantity, the quality, and the visibility of progress in reconstruction and security for the normal Afghan people, the Afghan in the street, so to speak. I think we all realize, I hope we all realize, that a military solution is an illusion. It's essential to foster governance, transitional justice, winning the hearts and minds, and do the very complex work of reconstruction and development in a context of still not a situation of good governance. That's one of the most difficult things you can do. I don't think anybody knows exactly how to do it, but we have no alternative. And I was very happy to read a report from your institute, Breaking Point, Measuring Progress in Afghanistan, because you did, I think, what is most important, listen to the Afghani people. What are their concerns? Why do they still think there is a security gap? What are their feelings about the extent to which reconstruction is reaching them also in the isolated areas of Afghanistan? And I think some of the recommendations that I've discussed with the leadership here of your organization could be very worthwhile for us in terms of solving some of the concerns that I was just mentioning. First of all, I think I agree with what is mentioned in the report. To first of all, priority above everything else is to restore the public confidence in the security plan, including a good and professional level of Afghan forces. I will come back to that in a second, but of course this is a major concern. If you see the amount of Afghan forces that were, for instance, promised by the government of Afghanistan to the province the Dutch forces are in, which is in Uruzgan, we still see that we are far and far away from that level, and this is obviously a concern. Same goes for the Afghan police, where there is a necessity to reform the police, first of all. But second, I think we have also the necessity to have sufficient police forces, because in essence, if you talk about security, this is definitely not only a task of the army, but also of the police. We are now working already with auxiliary police in Uruzgan, people that are recruited for a short period of time with short periods of training. I'm happy to see that also the European Union is now, has started, let's put it that way, finally on creating a police mission in Afghanistan. But I still have grave doubts about the, again, the critical mass there, and I think we have to invest more into that area. Another point of concern which is mentioned in your report is the situation with Pakistan. And I think that is, of course, part of a larger problem. It is, in our view, very important that NATO allies have a common approach to Pakistan. I think what we see in most instances right now is that individual ministers from whatever NATO country go to President Musharraf or to the ISI or to some of their colleagues and are mentioning the concerns they have, and then everybody goes home. I think this is probably not a strategic way of looking at the problem. When you look at Pakistan, you first of all have to look at the country itself. Pakistan is a very complicated place. Many of you know that much better than I, but we have to start thinking about what we do, or what we want to see in Pakistan when it comes, first of all, to cooperation, serious cooperation, on the recruitment basis for the Taliban. I just have to refer to the recruitment settings in Quetta. If we don't do anything about that, we have a serious problem in Afghanistan. I don't think we do serious work enough about that problem. In any case, we don't have a common approach. NATO doesn't have a common policy towards Pakistan. I think that's a problem. Secondly, when it comes to the areas in the neighborhood of Afghanistan, obviously there are security concerns, but especially also development concerns, and concerns to what extent actually democratically elected leadership can function in those areas. So the whole agenda of elections in Pakistan, I think, something we have to at least think about together, to what extent we think that is important. I do think that is important, but it's also part of the overall solution. It will not be simple, it's complex, it can also have negative implications, but I think when we look at Pakistan, this is very important to look at. Certainly when it comes to the issue of development cooperation, development issues, I think it's crucial to look at education, about alternatives to madrasas, but also to specific programs on the border with Afghanistan. Also there, I think there is a lack of critical mass of looking into that. Fourthly, but maybe not so unimportant, I think it is crucial that we engage the Pashtun people on both sides of the border. And we have to engage ourselves in that, in terms of tribal shuras, maybe at a more organizational level with trilateral commissions that look at security concerns. And fourthly, also to look at the position of the Afghan government regarding the Durand Line. I'm simply trying to say this: we don't have a common approach to Pakistan. We know this is key for the security and the success of our forces in the south, and therefore I think a more common approach is very necessary. And it's not that all of this is in your report, but I think it's a key concern that we all are faced with when we look at the problem of Afghanistan. Now, maybe I should say a few things about what we are trying to do as Dutch forces and Dutch development workers in the south. I think, first of all, it's important to note that we have to see also the pace with which we can do something in Afghanistan. We are there for the long haul, many people say. It's very questionable if we are there for the long haul. This will depend very much on the public opinion in our respective countries. But we have to realize, all of us, also as a signal to the spoilers in the process, that we make clear that in any case, as far as I am concerned, the development efforts are there to stay. We are giving money and lending money through the different trust funds, which basically finance the Afghan government, the teachers and so on and so forth. But we do have to do much more. For instance, in working with the governors, because they have to be able to do the work in a decentralized fashion. I think we have to work with the National Solidarity Program. I think we have to work with microfinance institutions. I think we have to seriously think about alternative livelihoods for those, especially small farmers, who at present are not able or are forced through their debts to be part of the poppy economy. I come back to that in a minute. It's one of the most difficult issues to deal with. But I think these are the concerns that we have to tackle. I think some of you might have heard, and to talk about commitment and timing and exit strategy, this is maybe something for the discussion, but I don't think anybody has figured out, when we talk about an exit strategy in Afghanistan, what it means. In any case, everybody realizes that in terms of reconstruction and development, we will be there for the long haul. And in the military field, especially NATO is there for a longer period of time, and it depends obviously on individual countries to what extent they want to fill the forces that are part of the NATO forces in the south. Whatever the timing perspective you have, it's important to say, and I read it, I think, also in the report of the CSIS, if you want an Afghan face, you have to accept an Afghan pace. I think that's true. We have to really think about the timing and the clock, the Afghan clock when it comes to our interventions. We normally think in terms of our interventions mechanically in a few years and a few months, we have to do this and this and this. This obviously has to relate to the reality on the ground, and I think we often forget that. As a development minister, I see that very clearly. The first time I was in Afghanistan was in 2001, just after the intervention in Herat, and I was amazed. Frankly, I had probably a prejudice about the enormous strengths of the non-governmental organizations in Afghanistan, who have a long tradition of protecting people, through the civil war, through the Russian occupation, and so on and so forth. They have worked in very difficult circumstances. And I see how often they are sidelined in practice right now. You know, their people are being hired by us or by the UN. They get high salaries, or they do simply cleaning the cars and the big jeeps in Kabul. I'm exaggerating on purpose a bit, but I think we have to carefully look at for whom we actually are doing this. It's for the Afghan people. Now about our efforts in the South. I saw an article in the New York Times a few days ago, and it outlined a bit our approach to deal with the insurgency in Uruzgan from a military point of view. Now, there is much to be said about counterinsurgency. I think what the Dutch do is not, there is not a Dutch way of doing things. This would be very arrogant to say also. It's not a Dutch approach. We have military forces there. We have a provincial reconstruction force, tough soldiers. We have also our air force there. There are helicopters there. We support the forces of Canadians when necessary also in the South. But it is true that if you realize there is no military solution, and if you start from what we call an inkblot approach, you start with zones of security that you slowly expand, then you have a different approach as if you see everything in terms of counterterrorism. We have a long tradition in the military staff books on what counterinsurgency is. And I think the American administration is now trying to reformulate this in the case of Baghdad and in terms of the Iraq policy. I think it means actually that winning the hearts and minds is not a soft approach. It's the only thing you can do to succeed. Because if you don't do that, you don't get the information to protect yourself. I know with the way we operate, we have saved probably many of our soldiers' lives because we were actually informed by the people, by the population, where the IEDs were. Now, this obviously doesn't work in all cases and in all instances, and also the Dutch troops are active in very offensive operations. But I think it is key that you keep on talking to people, that you have shuras, that you make a civil assessment from the area where you go, first of all, that you work with the tribal leadership, you have a good sense of what's going on, rather than saying, okay, we can maybe work the best with the warlords that have the power at this moment, and then we can proceed. I think it has to be always not so much a slow process, but a process that is intelligent. And I think that the wording of that defense diplomacy and development in so-called integrated stabilization missions are there to stay. And if we would be in any other area of the world, this is something that I think is key to be developed. And I think nobody has the golden key yet. We have 2,000 military in ISAF at the moment. That is the sixth NATO contribution. Since the 1st of August, a PRT and a battle group in Uruzgan, what is called the A in ISAF stands for assistance, assisting provincial and central government to create a stable and secure environment in which to bring back effective government. That is the official definition. I think that's correct. Sometimes the word reconstruction is not defined very well. Reconstruction is obviously taking care of quick, visible projects. In health, key in Uruzgan, I mean, people have a very low level of development. There are no health centers. We need quick, visible projects also under the radar. That means you go to areas where there is no military yet, but nobody has to know it. So it's key to look at that important point. And when you talk about assistance, it is assistance also to an administration that is newly formed there. So I think in the appointment of governors, which obviously is the sovereign responsibility of the president of Afghanistan, it is key also for countries that are active in some of the provinces to at least be involved in what that means. Of course, there's a whole political game, as in every country, who becomes the governor, who becomes the police chief. But in the tribal balancing of what's going on in the different provinces, it's key that you are willing to engage and at the same time make sure that reconstruction is not only those projects, but actually assisting governance of Afghanistan in those provinces. And that's very difficult because, as many of you know much better than I, Afghanistan has a long history which is very complicated. It's not always been a nation state, and it's not very often governed from one center. And therefore, it requires also investment, especially in decentralized governance. And I think there is probably the key challenge that we have today. So our motto is, in fact, as civilian as possible and as military as necessary. a battle for the hearts and minds of the population. We are not here to fight the Taliban. We are here to make the Taliban irrelevant. I think that's the key, as being put forward by one of our colonels in the New York Times. That means strong, kinetic actions when needed, but focus on engaging locals and tribal leaders and work on development. I think these are the key words, and I realize they are not that easy to put into practice. On the dilemmas, maybe may I make a few comments on that, the dilemmas on the ground. If you look to our future involvement, and also the discussion we have in many countries on to what extent Afghanistan again can become, or again I shouldn't say, can be a reasonable, stable country in a very difficult setting, in a regional setting which has to be discussed, because when we talk about Pakistan, it's obviously not about Pakistan, it's India, it's China, it is Iran. I think it's key that on the D of diplomacy we do much more. It's not only a common position towards Pakistan, it's definitely also investing in a regional approach. And again, there we have to get our act together, that we don't do this as individual countries, but we do this much more as NATO allies together. And I think that's to a large extent missing as well. The dilemmas I wanted to mention is, first of all, the relationship between security and reconstruction, central government and tribal structures, Afghan ownership and international demands, and not the least, last but not least, drugs eradication and alternative livelihoods. On the security situation, I think I don't want to add too much of what I've said already. I think the key is, and I think the American administration has started to invest heavily in that, is training of Afghan forces and training also of Afghan police. I mean, this is the only way to start creating not only an exit strategy because we want to leave, but this has to be an Afghan process. And I think we can only remain legitimate if this is seriously handled, and if we are also making sure that these structures, these new soldiers, are working as much as possible in a way that comforts the local population. It's not easy. It includes also serious discussions on detention policy, for instance. Detention policy was one of the prerequisites in my country to agree on this mission. We wanted to also make sure that, you know, soldiers would not end up in Guantanamo Bay, but would actually be, you know, getting a proper process. This is important, I think, also for the legitimacy of such a meeting. The war against terror can only be fought on the basis of international law. So investment in Afghan forces, in the police, is, I think, key. And one of the most important aspects of improving not only the security situation, but also increasing the ownership of what we're doing then there. The second is the issue of stability versus legitimacy. This is always a key problem, I think, in our development efforts. Do we want quickly a stable country that could be at the cost of democracy, at the cost of women's rights, at the cost of saying something about the new amnesty law in Afghanistan, at the cost of not discussing serious projects of transitional justice, etc., etc.? It's also at the cost, maybe, of looking at our military operations. We have to remain concerned when it comes to that last issue, that our operations, where they are necessary, are carried out forcefully, but always in the context of a clear perception of what this means for the people on the ground. And therefore, I think when we have proposed as Dutch government, the last Dutch government, of an important humanitarian fund that immediately works with the military when it comes down to, I don't like the word collateral damage, but when a military offensive takes place and this leads to all kind of negative consequences, immediately you have to compensate victims. You have to understand what it means in the local situation. If not a military offensive, you might win some in terms of maybe targeting some Taliban forces, but the next day you will have 10 or 20 more. I think that's the key. The winning the hearts and the minds in the south for the 70% of people who are undecided where they stand, pro-government or pro-Taliban, is the most difficult question to answer. I think international humanitarian funds that relate to these military activities are very key, and I would like to make a plea for that as well. The dilemma between stability and legitimacy is also when you look at the pacification of the different provinces. The current leaders are elected, but it still means that for a large part of the population, they are not necessarily seen as legitimate, sometimes because of criminal behavior of civil servants, especially in the police, the judges, and the local authorities. And I think we have to look at that behavior and also, you know, discuss this with the authorities. We are there at the invitation of President Karzai. I have a high respect for what he's doing. We have visited him several times. And we obviously discuss also with the government there concerns that we have about human rights, about corruption, about drugs dealing, and so on and so forth. This is absolutely necessary to do because we support the government of Karzai, and he is therefore to be seen as legitimate by everybody. So this is basically this kind of two-track policy. Let me not take too much of your time and end with maybe a few words on reconstruction and drugs. On reconstruction, I think the key problem here is that where we have a NATO operation, and I've said a few things about it, we in the Netherlands believe in the importance of this NATO operation. We think it should be sustained. We think we have to also show that it's sustained towards the spoilers of the process. We are there for a longer period of time as NATO. But at the same time, I think it's very important that we make clear that the reconstruction is also organized in a similar fashion. I'm concerned still about the fact that we don't have a civilian hat in terms of civilian cooperation. International agencies are there and they do very good work. Let's not forget that in sometimes very difficult situations, but still very uncoordinated. Some governments are working around the government, others are working through the government. It's already a major difference. Some governments are decentralizing their reconstruction efforts, others are only centralizing it. Some are working with quick visible projects under the radar, as I said, others are not willing to do that. Now, I am not a believer in harmonization per se. I mean, you can endlessly coordinate all your efforts and then you're in a lot of meeting rooms and in the end nothing happens. But I think in Afghanistan we've gone to the other extreme. And I think it is important, for instance, when the Afghan Development Forum is meeting at the end of this month, that the key governments that are working on Afghanistan get their act together in terms of what they actually want to reach. For my government, it's important that we keep on working with the laying out of the national programs, with the marvelous ministers that are in the Afghan government working with very little support and with very little means. We cannot imagine how poor the country is, fourth poorest country in the world. When you talk about human development, the human development index of the UNDP. So very few civil servants. At the governance level, it is even less. So we have to also work through them in assisting the government of Afghanistan of laying out the national programs. And I just wanted to mention, for instance, the Minister of Education, the Minister of Rural Development. They are working in very difficult situations in very regions far away from Kabul to show the face of the Afghan government towards the people in the south. And as I said, politically, I think that is a very key element. My last point I wanted to make is something that I think is also discussed here, the issue of drugs. That's a very problematic issue. And there's no easy solution, as many of you know, have been working probably on drugs issues around the world. The increase in poppy production is worrying. As we know, it perverts the economy, it provides finance to the insurgency and threatens the stability of the government. It's the oxygen for Taliban, for banditry, for corruption everywhere. So we have to make sure that we agree on what we do about it, even if we know that the solution is not coming tomorrow. And it probably takes many, many years to solve the issue. I'm deeply convinced that we have to look at the drugs issue from, and not simply because I'm a Minister for Development, from a development and governance perspective. And I think in the CSIS report, and maybe I'm reading too much in it because I like the approach and I take out some other parts, but for me it's very clear that eradication alone is not enough. And even if you start with eradication without a clear sense of what this means for individual farmers in terms of alternative livelihoods, you're destroying a military mission, and you're losing the hearts and minds of the people. And I'm afraid that the enormous pressure that is coming from different sides to continue this counterinsurgency by way of eradication might be counterproductive. That doesn't mean eradication is not relevant. But it is only if you have an inclusive policy which involves going from the top down when it comes to drugs, those who are involved in drugs. And we know they are there from the top to, you know, the decentralized power structures. It doesn't work. If you don't work on a good anti-narcotics police that can actually act on the drugs mafias, what you basically say is we're getting the poor farmers and the rest can stay. What do you think about the legitimacy of your military operation if you do that? So I really want to plead for a fact that we work on eradication never alone, never in isolation, but always as part of a strategy in which we make sure that this is a development problem, not an easy one, but I think there are some examples, especially in the East, where alternative livelihoods and decisions by tribal leaders and local leadership is actually leading to more results than one might think. And I think we have to invest in that and we have to find a common approach. My feeling is that now there is no policy. There's simply different incentives from different countries. And some want to eradicate and others want to wait. And this creates enormous tension at the level of the different provinces. And I think we have to work on that. And this is from the perspective that it is a serious problem and that the Afghan government should make a serious attempt to disrupt the drug trade and to go after the drug lords in the south. So in conclusion, there are many aspects to the complex situation in Afghanistan. I think the military operation is key. Our efforts in the south with our troops is a very tough call, as is the case for many American troops. The answer is not easy to define, but it's definitely in a comprehensive approach. But most importantly, maybe, Afghanistan is for the Afghans to win. The international community has to be there for the long haul, to win the hearts and minds of people through development and provision of security. I think Afghan ownership is key, and good cooperation in the international community is crucial. These are the mantras we use in many instances, but I nevertheless want to reiterate it, and thank you for the possibility to say a few things of our approach in Afghanistan. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Minister. We have just a few minutes here for some Q&A, but I wanted to start out by asking you a question about the EU. I think everyone appreciates here your sentiment that, in fact, a strictly military solution is an illusion. And you mentioned that the EU is changing its tune a little bit. It's sending some police trainers, about 160, to Afghanistan. Do you think this is the beginning of a much greater EU commitment on the ground in Afghanistan, or do you think that's going to be too politically charged and difficult in the months and years ahead, and that this might in fact be the only EU contribution we see in the coming months?
No, I don't think so. I think it's been a major progress that the European Union feels strong responsibility for the future of Afghanistan. There is already for a pretty long period a strong development cooperation effort with Afghanistan. Many European governments have been very active, for instance the German government, in the whole bond process. I think this is a little mission, but still pretty important, to send the police out to Afghanistan. And I think it will very much depend on the next phase of the key period that we are going into in 2007. I think the EU, in my perception, the EU has to have a larger degree of activity in the European Union, especially in the development and reconstruction field, but also in the justice field, in the field of an alternative drugs policy. And I think once we are on the ground as EU with such a serious mission, you automatically will get a certain momentum because people are committed to the country, they see the situation on the ground. But I think a precondition for this is that the feeling among the EU officials is that this could be a successful mission. As I said, there are many concerns still about the mission. That means that if the EU is on the ground, they also have to make sure, and that is the EU's responsibility, to have a proper policy in Afghanistan. It's not an easy one, because also within Europe we have different perceptions on this. But also that we can agree with the United States on some of these key questions regarding drugs, regarding the administration, regarding the choice of governors, regarding the military approach, and so on and so forth. I think that if you look to the Europeans, we don't have a common approach as in many issues, unfortunately. But you see actually that if you look to the NATO commitment, we are there with 34 countries, and most European countries are involved, and I think they want to continue to be involved, but they have to believe that in a common effort we're looking at the same things.
All right, I want to open up. Who would like to kick off with the first question? Rick, go ahead.
Well, first of all, about the debate in the Netherlands last year, to be very frank with you, or to be very open about you, I think it was, and I'm not always complimentary to my own country. I mean, we made a lot of mistakes, but I think we had a very intensive, good debate on Afghanistan. The fact that a large majority of the parliament agreed with the mission in Afghanistan was on the basis of a thorough investigation on all the issues we mentioned here. What type of a mission is it? Can we really reach the goals we want to reach? The discussion was never, we don't want to get involved because we are not responsible. We have supported the United States after 9/11, as I think most of the countries did, in a common feeling of solidarity after the horrendous attacks on the World Trade Center. We were there to stay. We have our troops there. And the question that was part of the debate in the Netherlands was not so much the commitment to Afghanistan, but doubts the word to what extent actually the mission as it stood at that time could be effective in reaching the goals we all wanted to reach. There was a serious criticism at that time on the later stage of the mission Enduring Freedom, especially in terms of human rights and detention policy. There was an issue to what extent there was a real balance between the military and the reconstruction effort. And both elements were part of the debate, and we have now an agreement with the government of Afghanistan on detention policy and the necessity to abide by the Geneva Conventions. And secondly, we made sure that there was an important reconstruction part of it. And now you see, actually, that there is a growing support for this mission on the basis of a thorough political debate and an approach which we think might be the most successful. In 2007, we'll have to see to what extent that is really the case. And therefore, our government will assess this around the summertime or in September, to see if, and if so, how we would stay committed in the military field. In my own competence as development minister, and I look also at public opinion in my own country, there is definitely a support for long-term commitment to Afghanistan in the areas that I just mentioned. Overall in Europe, I think that it's very clear that we have made a commitment to NATO. Now, there are many individual countries. I would think it would be useful, first of all, in the way we communicate this mission to our people, that we are very sincere of what we can reach and what we cannot reach. That's first of all the first point. Secondly, that we describe clearly what this mission is all about. As you know, maybe in many instances in public opinion, especially on the left, but also in other areas of the political spectrum, the problem is that Afghanistan is seen as similar as the Iraq war. And I think we have to change the views of many of people in Europe to show that this is also in our interest to remain in Afghanistan, to be committed to the NATO operation, to show that it's also in our interest that there is a stable Afghanistan in a very complex strategic environment. And we have to communicate this by making sure that we have some more unified position towards the problems in Afghanistan. And I think that's quite possible. You see, for instance, debate in Germany is interesting in terms of their commitments. It's maybe not enough when we look at what maybe the Americans or the Dutch would want. But I see at the same time from the traditions in Germany, they are now putting tornadoes in Kandahar, which is already a major step forward. So I think everything will depend on did we really try to do our best and come to a common approach, and that will determine also the staying power. But I have not many doubts that, in general, the feeling in NATO is that this is a test case for the transatlantic relationships and the NATO cooperation in that sense, and therefore we have to invest in it.
There's a question in the back. Yes.
Yes, you mentioned that
Well, I think there's no doubt about it that they are relevant. The reason, one of the reasons we are there is that there is an insurgency from the Taliban. Now, I think it's sometimes very difficult to define what a Taliban is. And there's also clearly a difference or a distinction to be made between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. There is a hardcore, there's a level below that of people who might be recruited for further actions. And there is a majority of people who haven't made their choice yet. But don't forget, in the province that we are active, Uruzgan, it's a province where the Taliban was founded. I think the Taliban is there to stay. I mean, it's part of Afghan history and Afghan tradition. So I don't think you can, so to speak, exterminate the Taliban. That would be an unsensible policy. We have to make sure that the insurgency of the Taliban is limited, and therefore we come to policies regarding Pakistan, the need for some offensive military operations, and so on and so forth. But I think it will be up to the sensitivity of the political and tribal environment in some of the areas we have our operations to, we can influence how large the Taliban becomes. I think there are really different layers. There is a core leadership which also is inspired by really, so to speak, bad organizations in Quetta. There is a sense of the Pashtuns feeling alienated from the central government, so there's also a recruitment base. And if we do insensitive operations in which we don't communicate with the local population, or we have a wrong detention policy and so on and so forth, we might actually see that people might either be forced or willingly ally themselves with us, the Taliban. And then the question is afterwards, do we call them Taliban or not? Probably not. But I think that is what the fight is really about. And that's not an easy one. I think there is a hardcore in which it's impossible to talk to negotiate with. I'm afraid we have to fight them, and to fight them strongly. But again, this is probably a smaller group, and the rest will depend on the way we expand our efforts to rebuild the country. Poverty breeds also Taliban, there's no doubt about it.
Yes, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, NATO as an alliance is a military alliance. And it doesn't have necessarily a political hat. Of course, there is a political discussion inside NATO, but there's not a common foreign and security policy of NATO. And there are also member states who don't like the fact that NATO has a common foreign and security policy. France is an example, by the way, also this country, when we were looking at the Iraq war at the time. So I think, in my view, NATO has lost an enormous amount of credibility in the beginning of this millennium. And maybe the Iraq war was one of the defining moments, unfortunately. I think after that, what we see is quite an interesting development of NATO, because it became an organization that was able to pragmatically do certain operations that nobody else could or wanted to do. From, let's say, Katrina in the US to Pakistan, the earthquake, to Kosovo, and now also to Afghanistan. I think that's interesting. If you would talk constitutionally about NATO today, it would probably not survive. I mean, if you would have all the countries together, what should be the role of NATO in the next 5 years, you would have nice discussion for us, and you would never agree. The interesting part of NATO is that although it seemed for many to be buried in history, and I think still in many of our countries on our side of the Atlantic and also in the US, I wouldn't overrate the support for NATO as an organization. But at the same time, it's interesting that it has pragmatically developed itself. as an interesting insurance policy at a time of pretty large transatlantic tensions. And therefore, I would not underline the importance of NATO at this moment, including in Afghanistan. Well, I cannot judge exactly what the different policies are of the different governments when they actually go to General Musharraf. I'm not sitting in all those meetings. So it's difficult, and since you're now from the press, I cannot easily comment on this. But let me put it this way. I think we have to look carefully at the future of Pakistan. And I think, first of all, if you look to the democratic future of Pakistan, no, that's a very difficult word, because what is democracy in Pakistan? But it is important, in my view, when you talk also about the situation in the tribal areas and in the border of Afghanistan, that you see also increased room for maneuver for more civilian civilian forces to get power there. That's one point. I'm not sure if that message is given by all our leadership. I doubt it. Secondly, on the often double role that Pakistan plays, including its security services, we have to make sure that we can work with the security forces, the intelligence forces of Pakistan, because it's necessary for us. And therefore, I think that is also always our message in Pakistan. And I think we are improving on that. I think our visits to Pakistan have shown that we can work with them, but we have to also have some sense for the concerns that exist in Pakistan on the future of Afghanistan. So all of this is a very complex problem, but my perception so far has been that we are not together in finding a common approach towards Pakistan. I think it's key when it comes to Afghanistan. I'm not sure if I answered you exactly as you wanted, but I would leave it at that.
Great, thanks. Other questions? Yeah.
Road reconstruction is probably one of the key components of Afghan reconstruction. Why? Anything you would like to do in terms of creating livelihoods for the large agricultural population of Afghanistan or the small industries means the chance to market the products. And as we know, in many instances, there is very little serious roads to markets in Afghanistan, and therefore I see this as a key component. Secondly, sometimes, I don't think it's the only thing. I mean, if you talk about development cooperation in a modern fashion, it goes far beyond infrastructure or road building. It deals with, you know, the whole governance issue, with sectoral policies, with health, education, so on and so forth. I think sometimes it's important to have the visibility of a project as well. But the Afghan people listen, we know now there is a road between city A and B, and it's there because it's built for us, and now we can start communicating and so on and so forth and market our projects. So yes, road building is important. It's an aspect of Afghan reconstruction. But again, if a road is not secure, you know, it doesn't help much. So it is always part of a larger strategy of security and reconstruction.
Another question from the audience? The minister's answered all of your questions. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. And most importantly, I'd like to thank the minister for giving us a full overview of the Dutch approach in Afghanistan. I think the word balanced is just right.
Yes.
I think it's a model that can be useful to all of the countries that are on the ground, contributing both to the military and the softer side of the mission there on the ground. So thank you again for coming to Washington,
thank you very
and thanks
much
for your comments.
So. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Thank you.